The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And on behalf of everyone in the Focus on Females family, we wish you a healthy and happy holiday season. Please know, as always, we stand ready to help you navigate and break through your own personal healthcare maze. Don't just listen to our show, pick up the phone and call us with your questions. All questions are welcome. For our new listeners, this radio healthcare clinic is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive and dynamic health safety net with immediate impact to save lives and protect families. We make you a lay medical expert using our educational programs, including this radio program where we tackle a different medical topic with different guest expert each week, and our annual Women's Healthcare Symposium in March of every year. This past March, we had over 1,150 women attend. It's a free annual event. Our next event, the fourth event, will be March 21st of 09. Please write it down on your calendars. You won't want to miss this. Together, through these educational programs, you can better partner with your existing physician, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. Today, we're going to tackle Alzheimer's, and I say that because from a different perspective, because you can't really tackle Alzheimer's in one show, obviously. There are so many aspects to Alzheimer's, and as I was discussing with Dr. Susan Steen, our guest expert today, we could easily have a show just on the diagnosis of Alzheimer's, another show easily on the treatment of or where the treatment's going, another show on the caregiving of Alzheimer's patients, and so on. So we will have more than our coverage of Alzheimer's will continue beyond today. But for today, let's begin by introducing today's guest expert, Dr. Susan Steen, who is a board-certified neurologist and a partner of Tampa Neurology Associates, where she has practiced for 25 years. She completed medical school at the University of Florida, where she also completed her neurology residency. She is the president of Axiom Clinical Research of Florida, who conducts clinical trials looking at drugs and medications in development for neurological disorders. She has a particular interest in helping patients with Alzheimer's disease as well as their families, and she is the director of the South Tampa Memory Center. Dr. Steen has lectured extensively on dementia and related memory disorders and is currently involved in clinical research for new medications to help those with Alzheimer's disease. Dr. Steen is a member of the American Academy of Neurology, the American Medical Association, the Florida Medical Association, and Hillsborough County Medical Associations. Susan, it's great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Steve. It's good to be here.
So Alzheimer's, was this disease always of clinical interest to you since your early training?
Yes, it was.
And when we think of Alzheimer's, it seems that relatively recently, it's gotten more and more attention. Would you think there's an interest in increasing awareness of Alzheimer's in the community?
Well, there is, and that's because Alzheimer's is a very, very prevalent problem. There are about 5.2 million people estimated to have Alzheimer's disease currently in the United States, and that number is increasing every minute. The biggest risk of developing Alzheimer's disease is getting older, and that is what our population is doing. People that are 85 years and older have about a 50% risk of having Alzheimer's disease worldwide, and that group of people is the fastest growing segment of our population here in the United States, not just in Florida.
Mm-hmm. And before we get deeper into Alzheimer's disease, maybe we should discuss what it is and compare it to dementia. Is Alzheimer's a type of dementia?
Yes. People always ask me, what's the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's disease? And I explain that dementia is really a symptom. Dementia means that there is a loss of cognitive function, usually characterized by a loss of memory. But it's a process that occurs, so people are functioning at a certain level intellectually through their life, and then there's a decline. And there are many causes of dementia, and the biggest cause of dementia, the most prevalent cause, is Alzheimer's disease, which is a progressive degenerative disorder of the brain. But there are other causes, like stroke, like dementia related to Alzheimer's disease, like dementia related to alcoholism or other drug abuse, dementia that can occur in metabolic disorders like thyroid disease, and dementia with obstructive sleep apnea, et cetera.
Tell me about, let me share with you a personal experience I had many years ago. Of course, I'm a dry eye and cornea a surgeon, and I had a patient in my practice who was brought to me by her children. She was in her 90s. And she was blind in both eyes, and so she was withdrawn, and she would just sit in her bedroom, and not interact with the family whatsoever. They brought her to me. We restored her vision through corneal transplants, and the family would just describe how she completely changed just by the restoration of some sensory functioning. In this case, vision restored her to her former self. She started singing Italian songs and interacting with the family. And it was a wonderful thing for them to see. How frequently do you see, what would you call that, sensory loss of some sort, whether it be hearing or vision, impacting a person's ability to interact and provide adequate cognitive functioning?
Well, that's an interesting story, and certainly it is true that people need to have as much input coming into their brains as possible. And so when there's a deficit in vision or a deficit in hearing, people are not able to process that information to therefore maybe form memory or then there may be a difficulty in retrieving memory. The other thing that's interesting about your Italian lady is the question of depression, because depression in itself is a neurochemical disorder where there's a decrease in certain neurotransmitters that are important processing information. So people who suffer from depression may present with cognitive dysfunction, and that's on a neurochemical basis. That's a real thing.
Mm-hmm. And so, for example, let's say an individual, as they age, is losing their hearing ability. Can a scenario proceed whereby they ultimately become withdrawn if they don't have their hearing restored? And being withdrawn can affect their ability to interact with their family and friends?
That's absolutely true. And that's one of the first things that we check in people that come in is how well do they see and how well do they hear. And I encourage all my patients to get those things, if treatable, taken care of.
And so, and for that matter, there are many things that are available today, for example, in the context of hearing that are very simply, for example, hearing aids are very effective, are they not? And they're very simple to wear and take advantage of.
That's right, and people should wear them.
So it's important what we're saying here then, that those causes of reversible disorders that can affect your cognitive functioning should be identified and treated.
That's what we do in the clinic. As soon as we see someone that we suspect, or the family suspects, or the patient suspects that they have a cognitive problem or memory problem, we do a battery of tests looking at metabolic issues, their kidney function, their liver function, whether or not they're anemic, whether their thyroid is disturbed, what is their B12 level, and that includes also a physical examination.
Dehydration might be another possibility.
Dehydration, sleep disorders, psychiatric disorders.
So they really require a very thorough, comprehensive evaluation to start with.
That's right.
Okay, now, is Alzheimer's new, or was it always around? Is what people used to call senility?
Yes, Alzheimer's has always been around. Dr. Alzheimer was a German psychiatrist who lived 100 years ago who had a patient who presented with memory disturbance and psychiatric illness. And again, bringing out the point that Alzheimer's disease is a neuropsychiatric problem. It's not just memory loss. But there can be a fine line in between normal aging and memory loss and something we call mild cognitive impairment, which is a little more involved and is not normal, and then the progression of a dementia or Alzheimer's disease. But what we see now is more people with memory loss because there are more people that are living longer.
So to some extent, some memory loss is a normal part of aging.
Yes. As a matter of fact, we're best when we're in our 20s. When we're about in college age, we're at the top of our game. And then after that, it's kind of a downhill slope. people do have problems with their memory. And as we get older, it's more apparent. But it doesn't interfere with people's ability to do what they need to do. That's the key. And if people have dementia, the cognitive problem is to such an extent that they can't do what they used to do or what they need to do. But as we get older, we forget things. And the most common thing we forget are names. We forget names of people, sometimes people that we know. We have difficulty coming up with names of things. But someone with Alzheimer's disease actually cannot come up with a name, and it never comes to them. You know how we say it's on the tip of our tongue, and it will come, and it eventually does come. You know, get back with me on that. With somebody with Alzheimer's, it doesn't come.
Now, when you said before that with Alzheimer's, you're unable to do what you need to do, would you expound on that a little bit?
Well, again, it depends on the degree of Alzheimer's disease. And simply, most of us look at Alzheimer's as mild, moderate, and severe. And people with mild disease can really fake it pretty good. I mean, they may not know what day it is, and sometimes they might not know what city they're in, but they can still do things. They can cook. They can many times drive a car, sometimes not successfully, but most of the time they're pretty good at doing what they need to do. But when it comes to more complex intellectual tasks, what we call executive functioning, kind of thinking outside of the box. For example, I have a dentist that came to me, and he had mild cognitive impairment. And he was writing his third textbook, and he said, you know, something's just not right. It's just not coming like it's supposed to be coming. So he could recognize there was a problem.
Something was wrong.
Right.
Okay. At this point in time, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We've got a caller on the line. Patricia will be right with you when we return on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Why are 9 out of 10 seniors satisfied with their Medicare prescription benefit? Recently, 26 million seniors have signed up for Medicare prescription coverage. Now you can too. Call 888-58-ELDER. That's 888-583-5337. Now is the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans and plans with affordable premiums. Now through December 31st, you can even change your current plan. Call 888-58-ELDER or go to onemedicareinfo.com and use the plan finder to see your options. That's onemedicareinfo.com.
Do you have pain after shingles? In most cases, pain from shingles goes away after the rash heals. Sometimes, however, the pain persists. This is a condition called postherpetic neuralgia. If you are 18 years or older and had shingles more than 3 months ago but still have pain, you may be eligible to participate in a clinical research study. Qualified participants may receive study-related medication and a physical exam at no cost. Call Dr. Margarita Nunez at CNS Research, 727-576-8474. That's 727-576-8474.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Are you one of the many folks who suffer from dry eye? Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but dry eye is something you'll have to live with or nothing can be done for you? Well, don't stand for that answer anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you'll be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain and redness. Plus, begin targeted therapy right away. The Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, 3001 Swan Avenue in Tampa. Find them online at drmaskin.com. Haven't you waited long enough?
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Susan Steen, who's expert on Alzheimer's. And we have a caller, Patricia. You're calling from Tampa. Do you have a question on Alzheimer's for Dr. Steen?
I do. I was told a long time ago by a friend that aluminum that's in deodorant and also aluminum, if you use aluminum pans for cooking, can be linked to Alzheimer's. Is that true?
Susan?
Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
We used to think that that was true, but there's really no evidence that the aluminum that we come in contact with, like are in deodorants and pots and pans, are really detrimental to our brains. And they have not scientifically been linked with Alzheimer's disease.
So is there any toxins that we know of that, aside from aluminum, that may pose a risk?
Well, there's certain heavy metals that people can be exposed to, particularly something like mercury that caused Mad Hatter's disease. And other types of chemicals that can, lead can cause, particularly in children, can cause neurologic problems.
But nothing like a dementia picture?
No.
Okay. Patricia, do you have a follow-up question?
Yes, a little unrelated, though.
Okay.
I was told a while back by my obstetrician that when a woman is pregnant, her brain shrinks, and that's been shown by CAT scan, I think it is. And if so, why is that, and does it ever go back after having the children?
This is a very important question. Susan, what do you know about that?
You know, I've never heard that before, and I don't understand why that would, it just doesn't make sense to me.
This is while you're pregnant, the brain shrinks?
Well, that's what I was told. I don't know how much it shrinks, but I know during pregnancy you forget things a lot when you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Have you found that to be the case, Susan?
Well, there are certain hormonal changes that can be associated with probably attention issues, like during one's menses or postmenopausal, there's some talk that there can be cognitive issues briefly during those times, and that may include hormonal swings that occur with pregnancy. I think that could very well be the case. That may also affect emotions. And when people's emotions are kind of out of whack, they develop difficulty paying attention to things and therefore exhibit what looks like memory issues.
How about the fluid shifts that occur during pregnancy? Can you see that impacting neurologic function?
It should not affect. It should not affect the blood-brain barrier and cause cerebral edema or things like that.
Okay. Patricia?
I think that's it.
All right. Thanks very much for calling and listening to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you.
Okay. Good questions. All right. Well, let's go back to let's talk about the family and dementia. If an individual is diagnosed as having, let's be specific, Alzheimer's disease, does that increase the likelihood of a future generation having that?
Well, that's a very interesting question and something that I get asked all the time, obviously. When we think about Alzheimer's disease, very basically, we think about late onset Alzheimer's disease, and that means that the disease is occurring in people that are 65 years and older. And about 10% of our population that are 65 years and older have that disease. But the majority of people that have Alzheimer's disease, 90 to 95% of them, fall into that group of people. And so that's really what Alzheimer's disease is to us. There's a smaller group of people, that what we call early onset Alzheimer's disease, that occurs when people are in their 40s and 50s. And the reason I'm talking about this is because this is an answer to your genetic question. With a late onset Alzheimer's disease, common Alzheimer's disease, there is a slight risk if you have a first degree relative, a sibling or a parent that has Alzheimer's disease, you are at a slight increased risk of developing the disease. However, if you're in a family where there is early onset Alzheimer's disease, where the disease occurs when people are in their 40s and 50s, then that usually is very strongly inherited by one of several genes that are what we call autosomal dominant. And when one has that gene, then they will develop that disease. And they have about a 50% risk of having that gene. So there's a 50% risk of someone who has early onset Alzheimer's disease in their family of developing the disease.
I see. And is it known if you have a person, let me back up, or is genetic testing done on those patients that come in early, say in their 40s or 50s, and have problems with their cognitive functioning? Is that routinely done looking for that gene?
Yes, especially if there's a story, the story of aunts, uncles, you know, siblings, parents that have the disease early onset. There are certain genes that we can pick up and test for. There are three specific genes that we look for in younger people. In older people, there are some genetic testing, and there's genetic testing in families. But the testing that we look at, and this is the blood test or the urine test or the saliva test that people might read about, is looking at a particular allele on a particular gene. And if you have that allele, you can be at higher risk. Say you can have a risk of maybe 60% that you may develop the disease, but it's not 100%. So it's a test that we routinely don't do.
And are there other diseases that those genes or alleles code for besides Alzheimer's that a person may present with a comorbid condition?
No.
Okay. Very good. Now, we've talked about so far dementia, generally speaking, how a patient would be evaluated if they do have cognitive impairment when they present to you, as well as the difference, that is to rule out reversible causes of dementia, and then Alzheimer's disease. What people often say about the difference between normal aging and Alzheimer's disease, like with normal aging, you forget where the cars are kept. With Alzheimer's, you forget what the car keys are for. Is that a fair description?
That can be a fair description. It depends on where you are in the disease process.
Okay. And what we are going to do here is pause for a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to start talking about what is happening in the brain that is the findings in the brain of patients with Alzheimer's disease and if there's any treatments currently available or what you can do to address Alzheimer's. Thank you very much. We'll see you right back.
WGUL, Dunedin, Tampa, where your opinion counts. A service of Salem Communications.
With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. The forecast is for nasty weather well into this evening in the Seattle area, where the wind chill was 15 degrees this morning and a snowfall of up to 8 inches is predicted. Treacherous conditions shut down stretches of two major highways in the northwest, Interstate 90 in Washington and I-84 in Oregon. President-elect Barack Obama is creating a task force to deal with the concerns of the middle class. His transition team says Vice President-elect Joe Biden will head the force, which will include four cabinet members and other presidential advisors. An AP review of federal documents has found that banks getting taxpayer bailouts awarded their top executives nearly $1.6 billion in salaries, bonuses, and other benefits last year. The total amount given to nearly 600 executives would be enough to cover bailout costs for many of the 116 banks that have so far accepted taxpayer dollars. This is SRN News.
Hello, this is Private First Class John Carroll. I'm with the 793rd Military Police Battalion out of Baghdad, Iraq. I'd like to wish a happy holidays to my family, everyone in the Tampa Bay area. I'll see you when I get back.
Hi, I'm Captain Tamara Lee. I'm deployed at Joint Base Balad, and I want to say happy holidays to my friends and family in Clearwater, Florida.
I'm Staff Sergeant Qualls, deployed to Baghdad, Iraq from Tampa, Florida. Just wanted to say happy holidays to my family and friends. Miss you guys. Love you.
Praying for our troops this Christmas. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
It's the last weekend to enter. It's the last weekend to win. Cameras, GPSs, photo frames, laptops, a fabulous trip. PlayStation 3s, Xbox 360s. So call the Kim Komando Show. Enter online right now over at Komando.com. They don't call me America's digital elf for nothing, you know.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 18 years and is board certified, fellowship trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2008 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you've not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Focus on Females, yeah, all of us. studio lines are open. So get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We are tackling Alzheimer's with my guest expert, Dr. Susan Steen. And on the line is Sarah, Sarah from Tampa. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi there. Do you have a question about Alzheimer's?
Well, I'm curious about high cholesterol, especially the bad cholesterol. Is there any relationship to that bad cholesterol and Alzheimer's?
Excellent question. Susan?
Sarah, that is a really good question. And I don't have a good answer for you. I don't have a perfect answer for you, but I can tell you what the studies and literature show. There has been a lot of interest in and in incorporating statins into the treatment of Alzheimer's disease. And right now, we do not have FDA approval for statin therapy. But what I can tell you is that high cholesterol can be a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, and it may be on the basis, we believe, on a vascular pathology. When people have Alzheimer's disease or are at risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, which we all are, we encourage them to be heart healthy, because what's heart healthy is also brain healthy. So we encourage people to have control of their blood pressure, not to smoke, to know what their numbers are and get that that HDL and LDL where it's supposed to be and their total cholesterol. We encourage people to exercise both as a preventative treatment and as a treatment actually for the disease itself. There are other nutritional supplements that we encourage, particularly antioxidants like vitamin C, vitamin E, and alpha-omega fatty acids. So the answer to your question is yes, cholesterol is important just in overall health. And it should be addressed.
And the health affects the brain naturally.
Right.
So, okay.
So, Sarah?
Yes.
Yeah. Hang on a second. So when we talked before about that there are vascular causes of dementia, Susan, like strokes and what have you, and so therefore if the vascular or the amount of blood or the quality of blood perfusion or getting to the brain is somewhat compromised, then that could cause dementia. So what you're saying then, the thinking is that if there is significant buildup of cholesterol plaques in the blood vessels in the brain, then that could add a superimposed component of dementia onto Alzheimer's. So it could be like a multiple cause.
Yep, what we would call a mixed dementia.
Okay.
A mixed dementia is the dementia we think that has a vascular component, that a patient has had stroke in the past, and they also have a degenerative ongoing process like Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
So the thinking, therefore, if the statins are effective, then they can limit the vascular component of the overall dementia picture.
Perhaps right. That's another reason, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good. Sarah, okay. Do you have another follow-up question?
No, but that was a good answer, both of you. Well, thank you very much.
We thank you for joining us today.
Okay.
And on the line also from Tampa is Susan. Susan, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, where we're tackling Alzheimer's today. Do you have a question for Dr. Steen?
Yes, I do. For a person who has MS, could that possibly be a factor, a causal factor, with Alzheimer's?
Okay, another really good question. There is no correlation between multiple sclerosis and Alzheimer's disease. In other words, if you have MS, you're not at higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease or vice versa. But we do know that people with multiple sclerosis can develop cognitive problems. That can be part of what we call the silent disease of MS, or the silent symptoms of MS, where you know people can't look at someone with MS and know that they have a cognitive problem, where they could maybe see if they have problems with walking or that sort of thing. But it's an important thing to monitor for someone who has multiple sclerosis is their cognitive status. And there are certain medications that, you know, the standard medications that we use for multiple sclerosis have been effective in preventing cognitive decline in someone with MS.
And is the cognitive decline in those individuals with MS that do get it, is that age-related?
With MS?
Yes.
Well, the people with MS are subject to age-related memory loss just like all of us. the cognitive decline that can occur with multiple sclerosis occurs because they develop MS plaques, not Alzheimer's plaques. It's a totally different pathology and a totally different area of the brain.
Can you clinically distinguish the two when they're in the exam room?
Yes, you can. You can distinguish the two very easily because the cognitive decline is usually very subtle in people with multiple sclerosis, particularly early on. Whereas in Alzheimer's disease, it's easy usually to pick that up for a neurologist anyway or someone who's used to doing this kind of testing.
What are the earliest signs of the cognitive decline in the MS patient?
Well, memory, usually memory problems, difficulty paying attention to things.
Okay, so attention deficits. And when we talk about memory, whether it be for Alzheimer's or MS, are we talking about short-term memory, long-term memory, or both?
Well, we're talking about short-term memory, really, in cases of what we call dementia. People have difficulty remembering from moment to moment. They may repeat themselves, particularly in Alzheimer's patients. They tell you the same thing in the same setting sometimes, in the same hour.
But yet some people do that without having dementia as well.
I would worry about them if they do that. They may tell you the same thing maybe a few weeks later, but they should remember that they told you something.
I remember from my training years and years ago, I remember the term perseveration.
Yes.
Is that where they, you know, person in conversation may repeat themselves over and over and over again. So is that is an indicator of potential Alzheimer's?
Right. People repeat themselves. They tell you the same story. Yes, that's very, very common.
Okay. Susan, any other follow-up questions?
Well, I'd just like to ask one thing more.
Sure.
Is Alzheimer's more common in men or in women? And if so, why?
Yep, another good question. And Alzheimer's is more common in women because more women live longer.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just as simple as that.
That's it.
Okay.
So
yeah.
No gender predisposition.
No, there's no gender predisposition, unlike something like multiple sclerosis, which that's a whole other story.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Good questions. It's good to have you on.
Okay. I'll keep on listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. So we start talking about managing Alzheimer's disease in the context of what you can do before you get it. That is to say, we talked about exercise, heart-healthy diet. And another thing I guess people sometimes talk about is brain tasking or exercising your brain, such as crossword puzzles, word games, chess, and so forth. I imagine you'd be supportive of that.
Absolutely.
Is there any studies that have been done to show that it works, or is it pretty much just pretty much common sense that should help?
No, there are definitely studies that show that cognitive interaction, intellectual stimulation is very important after the time of diagnosis, and after, but even beforehand. And it's very clear that people who have been intellectually active through their life, and it doesn't mean they have to have a bunch of degrees behind their name. It just means that they have been involved intellectually. They read, they learn other languages, they learn music, they use their brain. And those people who have been solving problems in their brain like that over years and years and years have better connections. You know, it's like having money in the bank. They're better connected. And so the disease in those people progresses more slowly.
And when you say better connected, you're talking about nerve ending to nerve ending connections?
Yes, I am.
In the brain themselves, mm-hmm. more established or structurally more secure, perhaps, connections.
That's a good way to put it, yes.
So the nerves can talk to each other better.
Right.
Now, which gets into what happens in a brain with Alzheimer's disease. We talked between the breaks and earlier today about material that accumulates, that's been found to accumulate in the brain of these patients, and there are two different types of materials. Would you address that or talk about that?
Yes, and when Dr. Alzheimer looked at the brain of his patient who subsequently died, he described two findings that we still see in the brains of patients with Alzheimer's disease, and those things are called amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles, which are made up of a protein called tau, T-A-U. And these particular plaques and tangles are placed in certain areas of the brain, particularly deep in the temporal lobes, which is the part of the brain that controls memory. So that's why memory is the first thing that we see in patients is difficulty with that. There also, you can also see plaques in the part of the brain that controls language. So there you go with your problems with naming, where people can actually become so deprived in their language abilities that they have something called aphasia, which is means that they can't speak properly.
And are these deposits usually found next to blood vessels, or are they within the cell body, or at the maybe with the so-called synapse where the nerves connect to each other? Or?
Yeah, well, they're placed diffusely through the brain and particularly involve the cell body, so they kill neurons, and that's what happens. Okay. Is nerves get killed and drop out, and these nerves produce neurotransmitters, and these neurotransmitters make the neurons talk to one another through the synapse that you were alluding to earlier.
So these deposits are within the cell bodies. Is it felt to be a degeneration of the cell body, or is it felt that these deposits get there through the blood vessels circulation?
Well, we really don't know how they get there. We know that amyloid in particular occurs in all of us as we get older. It's deposited in all of our organs and our liver and our heart and everything else. But when it accumulates in these certain areas of the brain, it's very sticky and it's insoluble and it doesn't come and go like it may in some of the other organs. We know that the amyloid, probably on a genetic basis, in people with Alzheimer's disease is different than normal amyloid. It's of a different length. It's therefore more sticky and more destructive. So it causes this degeneration of neurons and cell death.
Well, this brings up the question of therapies. I know you're very active in clinical trials. I guess we can't. What can you say about the clinical trials of patients with Alzheimer's disease?
Well, I'd start off with saying, first of all, now we have five medications, four of which we use that are FDA approved, to help the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, to kind of slow the decline of Alzheimer's disease. And what these medicines do is they affect the neurotransmitters that are affected by these cells dropping out. So what we see in patients who are put on these medicines is there is a slowing of the decline. However, the patients continue to progress, and that is unacceptable. So researchers are now very actively looking at medications which will stop the progression of the disease.
Okay, and when we come back, we'll talk more about treatment and understanding of Alzheimer's disease on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
9 out of 10 seniors satisfied with their Medicare prescription benefit? Recently, 26 million seniors have signed up for Medicare prescription coverage. Now you can too. Call 888-58-ELDER. That's 888-583-5337. Now is the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans and plans with affordable premiums. Now through December 31st, you can even change your current plan. Call 888-58-ELDER or go to onemedicareinfo.com and use the plan finder to see your options. That's onemedicareinfo.com.
It's the last weekend to enter. It's the last weekend to win. Cameras, GPSs, photo frames, laptops, a fabulous trip. PlayStation 3s, Xbox 360s. So call the Kim Komando Show. Enter online right now over at Komando.com. They don't call me America's digital elf for nothing, you know.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show.
Prior to OxyContin and Vicodin and Percocet being called pain drugs, we called Tylenol and Motrin pain drugs. And nobody was running front loaders through the pharmacies and pistol-whipping men in wheelchairs for their painkillers.
No.
When is the connection going to be made in this society?
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show, brought to you by Novus Medical Detox, Sunday night at 9 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
The mortgage crisis, the stock market, the economy, all add up to a perfect storm as you sail toward retirement. Find a safe harbor for your 401k and other investments with Bethesda Senior Services. With Bethesda Senior Services, your money will be 100% guaranteed safe, and their strategies have never lost a penny because of a stock market downturn. Plus, Bethesda Senior Services can help find a safe home for your orphan 401k and show you how to move money out of your current underperforming 401k tax-free without losing access to your current plan. Take control of your retirement. Let Bethesda Senior Services show you how to turn your 401k into income you can never outlive and guarantee that your loved ones, not Uncle Sam, benefit from your estate. Call David at Bethesda Senior Services for a free, no-obligation phone analysis today. 727-667-5269. 727-667-5269. That's 727-667-5269. Florida license number L053550.
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back once again to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling Alzheimer's disease with my special guest, experts, Dr. Susan Steen. And before we start talking about clinical trials and treatments, but before we do that, I'd like to ask you about alcohol, caffeine, things that we normally consume. Can that affect our likelihood of developing dementia or Alzheimer's?
Well, with alcohol, there's alcohol-related dementia where people have abused alcohol over periods of time. But alcohol in moderation is certainly helpful in, when we get back to our heart-healthy diet, which is recommended for those people that can tolerate it, 1 to 2 glasses of red wine. Other nutritional issues, which I already mentioned, is a heart-healthy diet and the antioxidants with the omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin C, and low doses, vitamin E and low doses.
Caffeine, any comment on that as far as...
There has been a recent study that suggests that caffeine may be helpful. Caffeine pills or the drinking of coffee can be helpful in patients who have Alzheimer's disease. I don't really think that there's real strong data in regards to that, but yes, that has been a blip on the screen recently.
Okay. All right. Now let's talk again about the treatment. Clinical trials, the treatments, you said that there are 4 FDA-approved therapies or medications, and they seem to slow down the progression of Alzheimer's. Is that correct?
They decrease the decline, yes. They slow down the progression somewhat.
And they do so by improving the neurotransmitter, the chemical, the quality or the ability of the neurotransmitters to function, enabling one nerve to talk to the next?
Yes, basically that's what they do.
Right. So they don't affect the accumulation of these deposits.
You're exactly right. They don't cause any change in the progression of the basic pathology of the disease. So the disease continues to progress over time.
Okay. Before we run out of time, do you have one message to give to families out there, maybe the children, insofar as helping their parents if they're concerned about memory issues? What message would you give them?
Yes, I do feel very strongly about this, and that is the fact that the majority or many, many people with Alzheimer's disease are not appropriately diagnosed. They're not diagnosed, and they're therefore not aware, and their family's not aware of what is happening to them. So I would encourage people to be aware of their loved ones and pay attention. And if they're concerned that they have a memory problem or difficulty with, as I said, executive functioning, thinking outside the box, being able to do the kind of things that they used to be able to do, I would very much encourage them to present that information to their physician. The patient many times is not aware that they have a problem. There's lack of awareness. There's denial that there is a problem. And that's part of the disease. So it's not an easy thing to address, but it needs to be addressed, and a diagnosis needs to be made. And therefore, then people can move forward in regards to dealing with safety issues, with medication issues, both having their medications regulated and being placed on appropriate medications, dealing with legal issues, wills, living wills, that sort of thing.
And one never knows. It may be a reversible cause of dementia.
It very well may be. I mean, I see patients all the time. I had a patient who had obstructive sleep apnea who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And once he got put on a CPAP machine, his memory was completely fine.
That is remarkable. In fact, I want to say that we should repeat that. There was a patient who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease who was found to have obstructive sleep apnea, a topic which we covered last week, who, when treated for the obstructive sleep apnea, his memory was restored to normal.
That's true.
Yeah, this is something I hope every listener out there takes to heart and shares with at least 10 other people. This is vital information to share. Reversible dementia, if it's existing, it needs to be identified. How about people that are on excessive medications?
I was just going to go there. That's funny. We're talking to each other through our minds. That's another really top of the list. When people come in, I need to know exactly what medications. Your doctor needs to know what medications you're on and address that, because they may be fighting against each other. They may be causing cognitive problems.
Yes. Well, excellent. Let's see. We talked about several aspects of Alzheimer's disease. We really need to have a whole nother program to discuss from a caregiving standpoint, and we'll set that up sometime in the future. If your loved one already has Alzheimer's, what could be done, some of the things that could be done to in regard to caregiving. But for now, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Susan Steen, who has provided us her expertise on Alzheimer's disease. Thank you, Susan, for being here.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
And next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we'll be talking about reversible blindness and the new therapies, the new procedures that can restore vision from cornea disease within weeks compared to the traditional approaches, the traditional transplants, which took years. I hope you have a great week. This is Steve Maskin. You're listening to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Talk to you next week.
Focus on Females healthcare education programs are for you. Visit our free 4th annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 21st, 2009, at the Tampa Convention Center. And listen every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic on Talk Radio 860 WGUL. Learn more at www.focusonfemales.com. Oh, yeah.